ask my Vicky to come up and help me with this song. I know last Sunday was Mother's Day, but we were gone. But I wanted to do this song for Mother's Day, so okay, I'm a week late. Well, just a young boy in the temple one day, sharing with the elders, they were so amazed. Never had they seen one so young speak so blunt. They asked him many questions. Conversation went like this. On my mother's side, my name is Jesus. But on my father's side, they call me Emmanuel. On my mother's side, now I'm 12 years. But on my father's side, I've just always been. On my mother's side, I'm from Bethlehem. But on my father's side, it's the New Jerusalem. On my mother's side, I'll be crucified. But on my father's side, in 3 days I'll arise, and I'll sit at my father's side. He was the Son of God, and yet the Son of Man. I can't help but wonder what Joseph must have felt when through an open door one day he heard his son reply. He said, "You see, I'm the King of Kings that's on my father's side. On my mother's side, my name is Jesus. But on my father's side, they call me Emmanuel. On my mother's side, now I'm 12 years. But on my father's side, I've just always been. On my mother's side, I'm from Bethlehem. But on my father's side, it's the New Jerusalem. On my mother's side, I'll be crucified. But on my father's side, in 3 days I'll arise, and I'll sit at my father's side."
Well, actually, I'm not going to preach on Judges. That was what Nathan was going to, and I can't preach on that because I can't pronounce most of those names. So it wouldn't have been a very good sermon. I had the fortunate occurrence yesterday to go to a young lady that I graduated high school with. Her son graduated high school. And other than making me feel very old, when my good friend's children start graduating high school, I was in search of a sermon because Jana sent me a text message about, mid-afternoon on Friday, "Would you mind coming down Sunday?" And I got up Saturday morning, and the graduation was at 11, and I got up kind of early and spent some time in the Bible and was trying to formulate something, so I thought, you know, this is not going well. And I couldn't come up with what I thought would be beneficial for everyone. So I started looking back at some of my old sermons that I have on my computer, and I thought, nope, I've done that one there. I've done that. Nope, I've done all of these here. So I can't even go revert to something I've done before. And again, God provides for each one of us in his own way, because we went to the graduation ceremony, and the very first person to speak was a salutatorian. And I have never... Most salutatorian and valedictorian speeches are very cookie cutter. It's like they probably cut and pasted them from somewhere else, and they just... It was one of the most amazing speeches I've ever heard in my life. And it turned straight to me and said, this is what your sermon needs to be about. And I know it was God speaking to me, because when I got home, I sat down in front of my computer, and 20 minutes later, the entire sermon was written. And I had very little to do with it. It was exactly the inspiration that God gave to me. And I got it from Matthew chapter 13, verses 3 through 9. And this is when Jesus is on the shore, and the crowds gather, and he moves to the boat, and he begins to speak in parables. And even his own disciples are going, Lord, why are you speaking in parables? Well, he said, well, y'all are fortunate enough to know that what I say comes from God. These people don't know. They haven't been taught. They're not learned in the Spirit. So they have to understand things the way that each one of us would learn a new lesson. And usually that's by descriptive language, and that's what he used. Here in starting in chapter 13, verse 3, it says, when he told them many things in parables, saying, a farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. In verse 7, he goes on, other seeds fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop. 160 or 30 times 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear. The young man that was speaking at this particular graduation, and it was a Christian school graduation, so they were able to use God in their speeches, and it's not often you hear high school seniors invoke God in their lives. But this young man had a very good idea of who he was in Christ. And one of the references he made was to a seed, and I'm going to get to that a little bit later on, but I want you to realize the number of people you're going to come in contact with and have come in contact with in your life. The thousands upon thousands of different people that you're going to meet. And realize that each one of those people is different. No two people have the same story. Even brothers and sisters and twins have different stories. No two people have the exact same story. They've all been on fertile ground. They've all been on rocky ground. They've had thorns that choked them out. They've had the sun come to scorch them. They've had birds come peck at them. Everybody's had a different aspect of their life. But one thing that is consistent in their life is you as a Christian. Each one of them is going to see you differently. What must remain consistent is us as Christians. How we view them. How we see them. How we seed that ground that they're seeking to grow from. Each one of us as a Christian has to be consistent in how we do what we do as Christians. As a follower of Christ and a believer in his forgiveness of our sins, we must be forgiving as he is to us. I know it's hard today. It's extremely hard. One of the biggest suggestions that I have taken upon myself over the last 3 months is, I am not ignoring the fact that we have things going on in this country and this world, but I am choosing to not watch the news. It is a negative. You put a negative in, guess what's going to come out? A negative. I've chosen to be more positive in my life. And you will not even fathom what difference that makes to not only me, my sons, my wife, the people I work with, my family. I'm trying to be more positive. Am I perfect? Absolutely not. I turn the radio on, listen to sports talk radio, and I get mad at the radio because they say something about somebody or they don't say enough about somebody. And I realize there's that negative going in, and I want that negative to come out. And I can feel the tension begin to rise. I've started working recently. I still have my insurance brokerage, but I've started working now with a group called Initiative One. And it's a leadership group. They began a faith-based leadership training, and it's a 15-month training. So it's real intense. And I went through it myself, and I'm not an introspective person. I don't sit and think. You know, I'm not a philosophical sit down and think, why do I do the things that I do? And this particular thing made me focus on what it was that I was supposed to do with my life. But not only that, why do I make the decisions that I make? Why do I react in situations the way that I do? And it all stems back from different experiences throughout my life. Just like I said in the very beginning, we all have a different story. Everything affects each one of us differently. And it causes me to look back and understand why I've done the things that I've done. And one of the models that we use at Initiative One it's called the gears. You got the first gear, which is information coming in. You got information that comes into you and you begin to process it. And then you got gear two, where that process goes along with research. Find out the best possible course to take from that information that came in. And then gear three is the response. Well, most of my life, as my sister can probably tell you, I went from gear one to gear three and forget about gear two. Research and trying to bring things together. I was like, information, react. Action. And I've learned over the past, since January, about 6 months, that I need to spend a lot of time in gear two and very little time in gear three. And I think each one of us can feel that way about our sowing of seeds in this world. We go out and we throw seed down and we expect instant people to just come to Christ because we did. Because we fertilized the field. Because we put the seed down. We made sure that everything was right. Why didn't you come? Well, Their soil may be rocky. Their soil may be choked by vines. It may be scorched. And it may be fertile. We don't know. And the key to this is that as a follower of Christ, the result is Christ's domain. The sowing is our domain. The result, the reaping of the harvest, is not our domain. That's God's domain. And as we go through these verses 3 through 9, I want to kind of touch on each one a little bit and help you, like I realize, the people in our lives that are one way at first, but then they kind of fall away over time. That's like the one that's on that real shallow soil. You know, they're maybe, you know, a short time, maybe 20 years. They're real great friends for 20 years and then something happens and it falls apart. Or it may be somebody that comes in the church and is very gifted at a particular part of the church, but then they get disillusioned and they stop coming around. And we think we've planted that seed very well with them and we don't understand why they fall apart. Well, the seed that falls on rocky ground sprouts quickly but dies in the Son exemplifies a person who readily receives Jesus preaching about the kingdom but does not endure as a disciple. In this particular scenario, the presence of trouble, temptation, self-centeredness, persecution caused the person to stumble. This trouble comes because of the world. The person does not understand that God's empire threatens and conflicts with the dominant cultural values of our world. It also threatens and conflicts with the structures that our world has set up. Nor can they resist that threat. It is inevitable that the world will strike back. No matter how fertile your ground, the world is still going to come after you. No matter how much I learned in that Initiative One process, I still have to consciously work at going to Gear Two. And I'll give you a great example of that. This last year, I bought my wife tickets to the Fort Worth Stock Show and Rodeo. And we went, and our oldest son had something to do, so he didn't get to go, but our youngest son and my wife and I went, and we're sitting together, and we stand for the American flag presentation, and they do the prayer, and we're standing through all that, and then everybody sits down. And when I sit down, I felt something weird. It just wasn't right. And all of a sudden, the seat of my pants feels wet. And I thought, what in the world? And now my back is wet. And I look over at my brand new coat that I got for Christmas, and there's ketchup all over it. And I put my hand on my back, and I bring it around, and my hand's red. There's ketchup all down my back and on the seat of my pants. I could feel the blood pressure rising. Literally hear the pounding in my ears as anger built inside of me. I went from knowledge, oh, ketchup, to Gear Three real fast. And it obviously had to be the person sitting right behind me, because ketchup doesn't just magically appear. And I turn around, and the guy's got a corny dog with ketchup on it. Corny dogs are supposed to have mustard, so I'm kind of thankful that he used ketchup, because mustard's harder to get out. But he has ketchup just all over the place and has no idea that it's all down my back. And when I look at his face, I get even madder. I can feel not only is my back and my seat of my pants red, now my face is red. And my son's sitting here, he has no idea. My wife's sitting over there next to him, she has no idea. And I thought, you know what? There's two ways I can handle this. One will wind up with me in jail, and nobody needs that. And the other is I've got to set an example for my son on how to endure a situation. And this is my wife's birthday present. Wouldn't it be nice to have to bail your husband out of jail at her birthday celebration? So I decided that I would calmly go down to the restroom and wipe as much off as I could. And I didn't even say a word to the guy. Do you know what kind of relief went over my body at that time? Because in my past, that soil has been rocky in that situation. It's had vines choking it out, saying, go for it. And I got to that point right there, and I thought, you know what? Maybe at 45 years old, you're finally beginning to mature. I realized that at that point, I had to take the time to look at the situation. Not in my eyes, because my eyes, I would have been justified at yelling, screaming. I mean, anybody gets... And the guy, if he'd have said sorry, it would have been a completely different thing. He had no idea. None. So I think I would have been justified. Of course, I think we can justify just about anything as human beings. But I think I would have been justified to cause a big scene there. But what would it have done to my family? What would it have done to my reputation? What would it have done to solve the problem? Absolutely nothing. The ketchup would have still been there. I still would have had to sit through the rest of the rodeo with a soaking feeling. And it took that for me to come about and say, you know, I've got to change. So as we deal with those people in our lives where that seed falls on rocky ground, just realize that the world is attacking them. It may not be us because we're on fertile ground. If we're on fertile ground, that world's not attacking us as bad. We're always going to be tempted. Jesus was tempted. Doesn't mean you have to give in to the temptation. And being on fertile ground, we're much more capable of handling that situation. However, those around us are not. Secondly, the world projects limitations on each of us in different ways. Unfortunately, these limitations lead most of us to inaction. The seed that is choked by thorns represents the person who hears Jesus' proclamation, but the cares of the world and the lure of wealth choke the word and bring it to naught. That's from Matthew 13:23. The cares of the world signify an anxiety over daily life. Think about what you worry about in the world that probably, you know, I'm not going to get political, but there's certain individuals in our country that just worry you about our country. They worry you about what's next. And that brings anxiety to our lives. Now, my worry for that individual is not going to change that individual, is it? It doesn't at all. My worry for my children is not going to change the fact that they're going to be threatened throughout the day by various things. My worry provides absolutely nothing positive. It brings about anxiety. That's what the world does to us. It brings about anxiety. It depends on what kind of soil we're in, though, before we become accustomed to dealing with that anxiety and dealing with that worry. The anxiety is expressed in attempts to secure life without references to God. The lure of wealth exercises a similar hold over the human heart when material gain is the goal and definition of human success. With these commitments, the word about God's rule is not able to break through and nourish new life. It yields nothing. You know as well as I do when you get fixated on something in your life, whether it be a get-rich-quick scheme, a new job because this job's not good enough, I like that house because this house isn't, that becomes your sole purpose, that becomes your sole focus in life. And it chokes out everything else. And when you have that particular thing choking everything out, I want you to think about any time where maybe you've got a little food stuck in your throat, the last thing you think about is taking a breath in. You want that to go out. And when you're being choked by outside presence in your life, literally nothing can come in, good, bad, or indifferent. So as you deal with that choking sensation, you are constantly focused on what that goal is. Whatever's wrapped around that, their hands around your throat, that's where your focus is. It's not, huh, we've got dinner reservations at 8 tonight. I hope I make it on time. Your focus is now on the choking. What is it that's holding me back in my own eyes? Third and finally, we will interact with those who see past the influences of the world and the drawbacks of sin. They are the ones who will bring countless others to Christ. After all these scenarios we've discussed, addressing the negative response to Jesus' preaching, the last scenario concerns the seed sown on good soil. This seed and soil represent those who hear and understand the word. Their hearts, the center of their very being, embrace the good news. They fight off the devil. They endure difficulties and persecutions. They are not defined by worldly cares and wealth. They join the community formed by and committed to God's empire. and marked by doing God's will. So they live fruitful lives, signified by the abundance of their crop. You know those people that you're around that have fertile soil. You know those people that are around that will, in the worst possible moment of your life, bring a sense of joy and peace. Not happiness. It's not in the worst possible moment that you're gonna be running around, as we say in our house, doing the happy dance. But you will find joy, even through your struggles, around those individuals. You will find people in your life that you know are so well grounded in fertile soil that even in their absence, you feel the growth in your own life. Hopefully, each one of us can be that way to those that are on that rocky soil, to those that have that vine wrapped around them, who have the sun scorching them. We can be that fertile soil that they'll be drawn closer to Christ, because again, it is our responsibility to sow the seed, not to reap the harvest. That young man I was talking about earlier used a parable of his own, and I want to tell it to you right now, and it is something that I have never heard, and I've heard countless leadership seminars. I couldn't tell you how many sermons and Sunday school lessons I've listened to, but I've never quite heard it put this way. So we can easily count the seeds in an apple. Now think about it. All you need is a knife and a little bit of time. Cut that apple open, pull the seeds out, lay them out on a paper towel, and you can count how many seeds are in that apple, right? However, we can never count the apples in one seed. That seed hits the ground and becomes a tree. It produces apples. Those apples then produce seeds, which then again produce trees and apples and seeds and trees and apples. We can never count the number of apples in one seed. So again, our job is to sow the ground. Not to worry about the harvest, not to worry about how far it goes on, but to sow that ground so that as many seeds can be pulled from our tree as possible. I've got a tree in my front yard. We moved in 14 years ago, coming up this October. And we were the first ones to live in the house. Brand new. They put the builder put in trees. And they picked the two ugliest trees you could possibly imagine in our front yard. And one of them actually is a very nice broadleaf. Nobody can tell me what it is, me included. And it's got a real nice soft bark. It doesn't, but this particular tree has grown straight up, nothing out. So one day I finally thought, this is ridiculous. We've been here, this is like 10, after we've been there 10 years, I said, this tree looks stupid. It grows straight up and nothing out. No long branches whatsoever. So I dug around the base of the tree a little bit, and to the infinite wisdom of those who had planted it, they never took the root bag off of it. So the roots can't grow out. Now, they split the bottom of it so the roots could grow down so the tree grows up, but it can't grow out. Think about our roots. Are they down in that fertile soil? Where they can spread out and up and continue to put that shade that Christ has provided on those others around us. Is our root bag still on? Are we still here? Or is it open and letting it go? Look for the fertile soil, but realize some will be rocky and vines will choke others. We must remain constant and faithful that Christ will reap his harvest. Let's go to the Lord in prayer. Heavenly Father, God, we thank you so much for your church. And God, we don't mean your building. We don't mean the programs. We mean the people here that are believers in you. God, we thank you so much for their willingness to sow the seed. whether it be on the rocky ground, whether it be in the vines or scorched in the sun, God, we each look for that fertile ground so that not ourselves can be honored, but that you will be honored, and those that we meet in our daily life who have a different story each will be brought closer to you. God, we ask that you put that flame in our heart to reach others for you. And we ask all this thing in Jesus' holy name. Amen.